In the world of political podcasts, there are experts, there are pundits, and then there's Tom Powell. Happy Friday, and welcome to another episode of the Second Half Podcast with Tom Powell. Remember, if you're listening to this, that means you made it through another week, and margaritas are in order. And now your host, Tom Powell.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. As the man in the intro said, this is the Second Half Podcast, and I am Tom Powell. This is the part of the show where I give you a reason to go get those margaritas he told you were in order, and this week, it's because O.J. Simpson has finally died. And yes, I know that was last week, but we didn't do a podcast episode last week, and nothing more celebratory has happened since the passing of O.J. Simpson, so belly up to a couple of pitchers of margaritas in honor of that piece of shit finally departing this earth. And in case you haven't heard yet, that's right, O.J. Simpson has succumbed to his cancer and passed away at the age of 76. So, as I already said, celebrate accordingly. I know I am. Good riddance, you piece of shit. I don't give a fuck what anybody tells me. He did it. No doubt in my mind, he did it. Of course, that's my opinion. I have no facts to back that up. I mean, other than the fact that the blood was in his Bronco, the slow police chase that ensued, the glove, the knife, the whole shooting match, you know, besides all of that, it's all my opinion. I say that for legal purposes. Anyway, before we get into the news of the last 2 weeks, since I didn't do an episode last week, a reminder to make sure you swing by my website, oldhippiemedia.com. That's oldhippie, H-I-P-P-I-E, media.com. There you're going to find almost anything you want to know about me, including a link to my other podcast, Off Topic with Tom Powell, where I interview other people about their lives, their life experiences, the projects they have going on, and what they've got coming up. My latest episode over there is with Walter Masterson, but I have I've had a slew of great guests doing episodes with me over there, a ton of great conversations. In the near future, I have Hawk out in San Francisco coming up, and my wife and I are going to try and do an episode as we near our 25th wedding anniversary in less than 1 month. You're also going to find a link on where you can buy my first two self-published books. I do have two books available in paperback and ebook formats available at my website. You're going to find a link to my store. Like anybody else, I have merch. You're going to find my blog articles. I try to put a new blog article up every week to the best of my ability. Make sure you subscribe with your email so that you know when a new piece goes up. You're going to find links on where you can follow me on the various social media sites, links to other podcasts and articles I've appeared in, links on how to contact me, and more. Once again, that's all at oldhippiemedia.com. Now, we're going to stop pimping ourselves for a moment, and we're going to move on to the news of the last couple of weeks, and we're going to start where boomers are just going to lose their ever-loving shit again, because the cost of a stamp is going up again. From CBS News. When it comes to stamps, the word forever on first-class mail doesn't apply to prices. The U.S. Postal Service is signaling that the price of a first-class forever stamp will increase from 73 cents on July 14th, 2024, up by a nickel from the 68 cents one currently costs. When first introduced in 2007, a forever stamp was 41 cents. The stamps were named as such, so one knew they could use the stamp forever, quote unquote, forgive me, regardless of when it was purchased. The latest proposed changes to be reviewed and approved by the governors of the Postal Service also include a nickel hike to the price of a 1 ounce metered letter to 69 cents, the Postal Service said Tuesday in a news release. This was last Tuesday, by the way. Mailing a postcard domestically will run you 56 cents, a 3 cent increase, while the price of mailing postcards and letters internationally are both rising by a dime to $1.65. All told, the proposal changes represent a roughly 7.8% increase in the price of sending mail through the agency. Notably, the price of renting a post office box is not going up. Thank you, since I run all of our businesses through one. And United States Postal Service will reduce the cost of postal insurance 10% when mailing an item, it said. Now, this is obviously because the post office is fucking hemorrhaging money at an astronomical rate. That's not what the article says. That's my 2 cents that I like to add in after reading bits and pieces of articles. But according to a report commissioned by the Greeting Card Association and Association for Postal Commerce, if rate increases continue to proceed at this frequency and magnitude without critical review, it risks plummeting volume further and exacerbating U.S. Postal Service's financial challenges. Those challenges, if you ask, or if you're wondering, are as follows. In November, the Postal Service reported a $6.5 billion loss for fiscal 2023, and it's projecting a $6.3 billion deficit in 2024. Now, that is because of some legislative changes that were made under the Republican-held Congress prior to this one. That are seemingly difficult to reverse, but nonetheless, a $6-plus billion annual deficit, and you're going to see some price increases. And I say that the boomers are going to lose their minds, because every time the price of a stamp goes up, the boomers seem to lose their fucking minds. You know what I mean? I mean, they seem to really lose their ever-loving shit. They still think the price of a fucking stamp should be 15 cents. God damn it, what the hell happened to my 15-cent hamburger? So, yeah, I'm sure that you're going to hear from the boomers in your family pissing and moaning that it's over 70 cents now to send a letter. And at the end of the day, I'm sorry, even at 74 cents, it's still the best deal in the country. You get to walk into a building with a piece of mail, a letter that you want somebody to have, or a bill that needs to be paid, and an envelope, and you hand it to somebody and you give them 74 cents. And then they fly that across the country and hand deliver it to another building in a few days. For 74 cents. I mean, still the best deal out there. Still. In other non-political news, we had a solar eclipse last week. And damn it if there wasn't a rapture. I mean, I was told that there was going to be a rapture. I was told that I was going to be left on Earth with all the other non-Christians. All of us heathen atheists were going to be left here to stew in our own juices with our really, really good weed and really fucking filthy sex. But no. The sun stayed in its spot in the sky. The moon moved between the earth and the sun. Everybody went, ooh, ah, look through their special glasses. And then when it was all said and done with, the fucking Christians are still here. They're still here. They're still taking up lanes on the highway. They're still taking up seats on the airplane. What? Worst rapture ever. Now on to the political news, and that's what you normally come here to hear me talk about. Former Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy says the only reason he is no longer Speaker is because one man slept with a 17-year-old girl and he wanted McCarthy to stop an ethics investigation into that incident. And we know who that one man is. That would be Matt Gaetz. That is a hell of a line from the former Republican House Speaker. But goddammit if he didn't say it. I'm going to read to you now from The Guardian. The far-right Florida Republican Matt Gaetz forced Kevin McCarthy out as House Speaker last year, quote, because he slept with a 17-year-old, end quote, and wanted a congressional ethics investigation to end, McCarthy charged on Tuesday, once again of last week. Quote, I'll give you the truth why I'm not speaker, McCarthy said in an event at Georgetown University in Washington. Because one person, a member of Congress, wanted me to stop an ethics complaint because he slept with a 17-year-old, an ethics complaint that started before I ever became speaker, and that's illegal, and I'm not going to get in the middle of it. Now, did he do it or not? I don't know, but ethics was looking at it. There's other people in jail because of it, and he wanted me to influence it. The House ethics investigation of allegations against Gates opened in 2021 when Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, was the speaker. A House investigation was paused when Gates was investigated by U.S. Department of Justice for sex trafficking over allegations that he paid for sex and had sex with an underage woman. In December of 2022, Joel Greenberg, a former Florida tax collector whose arrest led to the investigation of Gates, was sentenced to 11 years in prison for offenses including sex trafficking a minor. In February of 2023, prosecutors said they would not issue charges. The House ethics investigation then restarted. Gates denies any wrongdoing. On Tuesday, he told Politico, Kevin is a liar. Which actually is why he isn't speaker. Just ask any of the 224 people who voted to remove him. Now, we're going to pause the story right there because, interestingly enough, what Matt Gaetz doesn't tell you right there is that a vast majority of those 224 people were Democrats. That the only reason Matt Gaetz got what he wanted is because Democrats said, I'm not here to protect the Republican speaker. I believe only 9 of those 224 people were actually Republicans. But he's never going to mention that part, is he? McCarthy became the first speaker ever ejected by his own party, last October after Gates introduced a motion to vacate and attracted support from 7 other Republicans. Sorry, I was off. It wasn't 9. It was 8 Republicans. Because Democrats refused to come to McCarthy's aid, that was enough to show him the door. McCarthy left Congress at the end of last year. Citing a review of private correspondences, the Daily Beast has reported that Gates indicated to a friend that his effort to undercut, isolate, and ultimately remove McCarthy was indeed payback for the House ethics investigation. The Beast said other Republican congressional sources also said Gates was motivated to move against McCarthy by the ethics investigation, not policy differences. Gates told the Beast, as I've answered likely 100 times on the record, I led the charge to remove Kevin McCarthy from his role as speaker because he failed to keep his promises. McCarthy lost his job shortly after relying on Democratic support to pass a spending package, thereby averting a government shutdown. His successor as speaker, Mike Johnson, now faces a similar threat, which we're going to get into in just a moment. Now, that is what the Republican Party has become in 2024. Matt Gaetz could not become Speaker of the House. Remember all those votes when the Republicans first took over. Vote after vote after vote after vote after vote, and they could not get the votes to get Kevin McCarthy to become Speaker of the House. And in the end, he had to sell his fucking soul, and I don't even believe we have souls, to get that speakership. One of the things that he had to give the Republicans was the ability to just call for a simple up or down vote to vacate the speakership should anybody in the House of Representatives disagree with the Speaker of the House. And he gave it up. Then he didn't do exactly as they said. And then they got him out. And then they went, I believe it was 3 weeks until they could find a successor. That successor is now the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, and he's fucked as well. Mike Johnson is facing the same fate as now Marjorie Taylor Greene wants him removed and will most likely put a motion to vacate on the floor. Now, the one thing that Mike Johnson has going for him is that Democrats are hinting that they might actually help save his hide this time. Because Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to get the same number-ish, maybe 8 members of the House of Representatives are going to vote for that on the Republican side. They need the Democrats again. And here's the ironic part. One of the things that pissed off Matt Gaetz, allegedly, back in the day, is that Kevin McCarthy worked with Democrats to get shit done, to avert a government crisis, a shutdown, to actually keep the government going and serving the people that they serve, right? Matt Gaetz was pissed off that Kevin McCarthy worked with Democrats. And then he put a motion on the floor to vacate the House. And what did Matt Gaetz need in order to get it done? Help from Democrats. Make it make sense, folks. And now Marjorie Taylor Greene's in the same spot. However, as I said, the Democrats have hinted that they might actually help save his ass this time around in exchange for some concessions. Here are some bills that we want to see brought to the floor. Here are some bills that we want to see passed. Here are some things that we want. You going to make these things happen for us? Because if you want to make these things happen for us, then maybe we'll save your hide. Just so that we can keep the government open, keep everything rolling. Because, listen, it took you guys 3 weeks to fill the last vacancy when you ousted the last Speaker of the House. Lord only knows how long it's going to take this time around. We actually have shit that needs to get done. So, we'll see how that goes. If he relies on Democrats to save his ass, if Marjorie Taylor Greene puts a motion on the floor to vacate the House speakership and Mike Johnson remains speaker, he defeats that attempt to oust him with Democratic votes, his fucking political career in the Republican Party is over. Over. It's going to take a generation for this MAGA bullshit to wash out of the Republican Party. And the MAGA folks are always going to exist in this country. But in political power, it's going to take a generation for them to cycle out. So his political career, over. Marge doesn't have a whole lot of success, though. You know what I mean? She isn't about governing. She's about payback. She's about vengeance. She's about, you know, removing everybody that has ever served in any Democratic administration ever, and her attempt to remove Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has now failed. They succeeded to impeach him in the House, and then it went to the Senate for a trial, and the Senate has dismissed that case against him. I'm going to read you now from the New York Times. The Senate on Wednesday dismissed the impeachment case against Alejandro Mayorkas. That was this Wednesday, not last Wednesday. The Homeland Security Secretary, voting along party lines before his trial got underway to sweep aside two charges accusing him of failing to enforce immigration laws and breaching the public trust. By a vote of 51-48, with one senator voting present, the Senate ruled that the first charge was unconstitutional because it failed to meet the constitutional bar of a high crime or misdemeanor. Republicans united in opposition, except for Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, the lone present vote. Coward. While Democrats were unanimous in favor, Ms. Murkowski joined her party in voting against dismissal on the second count of on the same grounds. It fell along party lines with a 51-49 vote. Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York and the majority leader, moved to dismiss each charge, arguing that a cabinet member cannot be impeached and removed merely for carrying out the policies of the administration he serves. Quote, "To validate this gross abuse by the House would be a grave mistake and could set a dangerous precedent for the future," Mr. Schumer said. It took only about 3 hours for the Senate to dispense with the matter. Republicans, for their part, warned that the dangerous precedent was one that Democrats set by moving to skip an impeachment trial altogether, which they argued was a shirking of the Senate's constitutional duty. And yes, if you find yourself listening to this podcast, hearing that and going, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Oh, it gets better. They tried several times to delay the dismissal, failing on a series of party line votes. Quote, "Tabling articles of impeachment would be unprecedented in the history of the Senate. It's as simple as that," said Senator Mitch McConnell, minority leader of Kentucky. Mitch McConnell is complaining that the Democrats have done something that is unprecedented in senatorial history. Mitch McConnell, the gentleman who would not even give Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee a vote on the floor of the Senate. Mitch McConnell, who held a Supreme Court seat open for almost the entirety of President Obama's last year in office, is complaining that the Democrats are doing something that's unprecedented. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? the balls on this fucking guy must need to be carried around in a fucking wheelbarrow. He has no shame. McConnell also did not mention that he voted in favor of an unsuccessful Republican effort in 2021 to dismiss a second impeachment case against former President Donald J. Trump over the January 6th attack on the Capitol before the Senate held a trial. For Mitch McConnell to be complaining that anything is unprecedented, that anything sets a bad precedence when it comes to senatorial conduct, is fucking rich indeed. Mitch McConnell needs to fuck all the way off. He needs to get the fuck out of the Senate, stay the fuck out of the Senate, and keep his narrow ass in fucking Kentucky. Jesus fucking Christ. Are you fucking... How the fuck... Sorry. How the fuck are you a reporter and you're in a scrum of reporters and you got Mitch fucking McConnell in front of you and you're talking about the fact that the Democrats just swept away the impeachment charges for DHS Secretary Mayorkas and you put a microphone in Mitch McConnell's face and he goes, well, this is unprecedented for the United States Senate. You know, this sets a bad precedent for future proceedings. How the fuck do you not then take the microphone back to your face and go, are you fucking kidding me, Mitch? Barack Obama has entered the chat. Merrick Garland has entered the chat. Are you fucking kidding me? He is pure evil. Mitch McConnell is pure evil. And the most ruthless politician I've ever seen in my life, in maybe the history of this country. It certainly my life. It is unbelievable what he is willing to do. Fucking Republicans, I swear. Speaking of Republicans, the far-right loons have now killed FISA in America, at least for the time being. I'm going to read to you now from CNN. House conservatives revolted against GOP leadership and defeated a key vote on the floor Wednesday, the latest blow to Speaker Mike Johnson that comes after former President Donald Trump called on Republicans to kill a controversial surveillance law. Trump had urged House Republicans to reject a reauthorization of the law known as FISA ahead of the key procedural vote on Wednesday, adding to headaches for GOP leaders who have struggled to build support for the legislation, but were still attempting to forge ahead and advance the bill. Kill FISA, Trump wrote in all caps on his social media platform Truth Social. This marks the fourth time in Johnson's tenure that the House has defeated a rule vote, a major embarrassment for leadership. The tally was 193 to 228, with 19 Republicans bucking House GOP leadership and voting with Democrats to sink the procedural vote and take down a rule to govern debate on the reauthorization bill, as well as several other bills. So what this means is that we have majority leadership in the House of Representatives, the Republicans, and the leader in that party within that chamber, the Speaker of the House, who is now Mike Johnson, completely and utterly unable to control his caucus. Mitch McConnell was a fucking piece of shit, right? Mitch McConnell is evil. If there is a heaven and a hell, Mitch McConnell's going to burn in fucking hell forever. But Mitch McConnell knew how to do the politics shit, knew how to get bills passed. And he didn't bring shit to the floor. If he didn't know he had the votes, or if he wasn't doing it because he knew that bill was going to get defeated and he wanted it to be defeated in the public eye. Mitch McConnell never brought something to the floor that he didn't know he had the fucking votes for. With the exception of killing Obamacare. McCain taught Mitch McConnell a fucking lesson that night. Because that was a rarity. Mike Johnson has no fucking idea what he's doing. And he cannot control the far right wing lunacy in his own fucking party, right? They are not on the same page in any way, shape, or form. It is chaos. It is havoc. It's dysfunction in congressional majority in the congressional majority in the House of Representatives. It is full on dysfunction. House Republicans have been fiercely divided over how to handle the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act reauthorization, putting pressure on Johnson to find a path forward amid competing factions within his own conference. With the threat of a vote on his ouster looming, the Louisiana Republicans' every move is under even more intense scrutiny, and the Speaker has once again found himself at odds with his right flank over the surveillance law. He can't get a fucking thing passed, and here's the problem that he has. It's Donald Trump. Donald Trump is his biggest problem. And what did he just do? He just went down to Mar-a-Lago and he kissed the ring. He stood there next to Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago and he was a good little boy, just like Kevin did. Because that's what you have to do in the Republican Party right now. You have to go kiss the fucking ring. And the far right wing of his party is going to do whatever Donald Trump tells them to do. Whatever they tell him to do. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene said, can you believe Mike Johnson is proceeding with this bill when Donald Trump said he wants it dead? Who the fuck cares what Donald Trump wants? Marjorie Taylor Greene does. The Matt Gaetzes of the world do. This is a full-blown fucking cult, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me, I need to round my edges. Full-blown insanity in the Republican House majority. It is a split faction with a small number of them hanging on every word Donald Trump says. And others going, okay, listen, we want to make sure that we do some of the things that Trump wants to do, but we also got to make sure that we govern, you know, because it's kind of what we got to do here, you know what I mean? They don't give a fuck on the far right. They don't get, there's like that 9 to 20 person group on the far, far right, that the really true Trump loyalists that Mike Johnson can't afford to lose, man. He's got like a 2 or a 3 vote majority right now. He can't afford to lose 5, let alone 9, let alone 20. And that group of people just fucking hangs on Donald Trump's every fucking whim. And here we are. We might be looking at losing another House Speaker, unless the Democrats come to save him. These fucking people are dysfunctional at best. And they're like, they scraped the bottom of the barrel for this batch of Republicans, did they not? I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene? Marjorie Taylor Greene. What fucking cave did they scrape her off the ceiling of? Where did this fucking woman come from? And all of a sudden, you know, she's Trump's gal in the House. Matt Gaetz, the walking, living cartoon character that traffics in underage girls, allegedly. Where the fuck did this clown come from? Where the fuck did any of these new far-right-wing Trumpist Republicans come from? Here's another example. Lauren Boebert continues to be an embarrassment to herself and the fucking country. This time she was apparently overserved at an event with Trump and bothered Trump so much that his security detail had to step in. Lauren Boebert is pure fucking trash. I'm going to read to you now from the New York Intelligencer. Might as well class it up a bit since we're talking about lowlives like fucking Lauren Boebert. When people experience a moment of public embarrassment for which they are at fault, it sometimes motivates them to change their behavior. Representative Lauren Boebert has not gone this route. 3 months after she was kicked out of a theater for vaping in front of a pregnant woman and getting handsy with her date, CNN reports that she had a little too much fun at the New York Young Republicans Club's annual holiday gala. During the party held at Cipriani Wall Street, I hope I said that correctly, waitstaff reportedly cut Boebert off after she, after a long night of drinking, my apologies, with one source at the event telling CNN that, quote, a server told the congresswoman they believed she had been overserved, end quote. Boebert, who has met Donald Trump many times, then kept trying to take selfies with the former president, who was seated at her table. It reportedly got so bad that Trump's security pulled her aside and asked her to please stop. Like any other seasoned partier, Boebert knew what to do next: relocate to a different bar. Despite the behavior check at the cavernous downtown restaurant, photos from that night show Boebert going uptown to an after party with George Santos at the conservative hotspot Beach Cafe on the Upper East Side. Boebert, who is currently recovering from an emergency surgery for a blood clot in her leg, is facing a tough re-election prospect after switching districts in pursuit of an easier route back to Congress. Thankfully, though, her behavior at the holiday party did not affect her standing within the Republican Party. Last month, Trump endorsed her as a trusted America First fighter. Because trash begets trash. And that's what this entire group of people is. Trash. Marjorie Taylor Greene, trash. Trump, trash. Gates, trash. Boebert, fucking trash, man. Trash. But any chance she gets to get around a little, as our friend Hawk calls him, little Donnie Two Scoops, this is how she gets. Because it's a fucking cult, ladies and gentlemen. It's a fucking cult. Now, speaking of Der Muskführer, his hush money criminal trial in New York started Monday, and he has already fallen asleep in court, stormed out of the courtroom once, has shown he has no clue how picking juries go, and has now attempted to tamper with the jury pool. He's literally going to talk himself into jail, folks. You can't make it up. You cannot make it up. He's going to talk his way right into jail. I am supremely confident he's going to be found guilty in this case. Excuse me. Goodness gracious. I got another one in there. My sneezes usually come in groups of two, so. Okay. Fallen asleep in court. They got photos of him, right? I don't give a shit what anybody says. Oh, he wasn't sleeping. He was praying. No, he was asleep, man. The guy that calls Joe Biden Sleepy Joe fell asleep in his own criminal case. Court case. They got pictures of it. I mean, for fuck's sake. Having no clue how the picking a jury goes. He was on Truth Social bitching that he didn't understand why strikes, you know, his defense team, as they're interviewing potential jurors, can strike a juror. So we don't want that juror on. For whatever reason, they don't think that juror is going to be fair to Donald Trump, so they want to strike him. Trump is on Truth Social saying he didn't understand why he was limited in the number of strikes he had. Strikes are unlimited when picking a jury. Why am I being singled out? And my team only gets whatever the number is, 10, 15, 20, whatever the number of strikes are. But strikes have never been unlimited. He's just too fucking stupid to understand that. So yet again, because he's too fucking stupid to understand something, it must be because it's rigged against him. Oh, it's happening to me, but nobody else. No, you fucking moron. It happens to everybody. That's how picking a fucking jury works. You ignorant waste of otherwise useful human DNA. Jesus fucking Christ. And then, like I said, he's already started to fuck with the jury. Listen to this shit. Now, I'm recording this. It is currently 6:15. We've been at this for now a little over a half an hour. It's 6:15 p.m. on Thursday, April 18th. I'm recording it now to air on Friday, April 19th. This happened today, Thursday the 18th. I'm going to read to you now from Raw Story. Juror number two in the Trump hush money trial was dismissed on Thursday after she raised concern that her identity might have already been compromised. Washington Post reporter Erin Blake immediately drew a line between her dismissal and a Tuesday night segment on Fox News in which host Jesse Waters broadcast some personal details about the jurors whose names are not being publicly identified yet. Quote, Fox News host Jesse Waters on Tuesday broadcast extensive biographical details about juror number two, her neighborhood, her occupation, her education, marital and family status, and what industry her fiancé works in, Blake wrote on Twitter. Quote, he concluded by saying, I'm not sure about juror number two. This juror that Waters said he wasn't sure about was the same one who was dismissed Thursday after expressing concerns about being identified. Waters followed up his segment on Wednesday by declaring, without providing any evidence, that undercover liberal activists were lying about their feelings about former President Donald Trump to get on the jury and convict him no matter the evidence. Trump would subsequently promote these false claims on his Truth Social page, which would lead to immediate accusations of him violating a gag order that prevented him from talking about jurors in the trial. And let's just pause right there. The gag order says he can't say anything about jurors in the trial. He made a post on Truth Social that quoted Jesse Waters saying that they're finding liberal activists lying during the questioning in order to become jurors on the trial. That is a clear violation of the fucking gag order. Judge Merkin, what are you going to do about this clear violation of the gag order? Why is he not going to get to... fucking come down on this prick, man. You put a gag order in place, he violated it. Either you're going to adhere to your gag orders or you're going to let people shit all over your fucking, your authority. And the fact that Jesse Waters had biographical data like the neighborhood, the occupation, the marital status of, the whole shooting match of one of the jurors whose information is not made public tells you that somebody that's in that fucking courtroom is getting that information to Fox News. Who in the courtroom would have the most interest in getting that information to Fox News so that it can get out in the public sphere as quickly as humanly possible so that people freak out and then don't want to be part of this fucking jury? I'm sure you could do a little bit of math there. You can connect a few dots. It's only a handful of people that are in that room. Trump has continuously pushed the limits when it comes to his gag order, and prosecutors with Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office on Thursday accused him of violating it in seven separate instances since the hearing started on Monday, including with direct attacks on witnesses in the case, such as former fixer Michael Cohen. So far, however, Judge Juan Merkin has not hit Trump with any punishments for prospective gag order violations, although he did reprimand Trump for interacting with a prospective juror while in court on Tuesday. A hearing concerning gag order violations is scheduled for April 23rd. Dude, either we're going to do this the right way or you're going to let this dude shit all over your court. And if you let this dude shit all over your court, then at the end of the fucking day, everybody's going to shit on your court because you have no fucking authority. Either uphold your fucking gag order or just fucking move on. Just get yourself out of the case and get a real fucking judge in there. Also, by the way, when it comes to Judge and the bond, Trump and the bond, has his bond actually been posted? Remember they lowered his bond from the almost $500 million down to $175 million, and then a company from California stepped in and put the bond up and everything was cool? Well, it turns out everything's not cool because that bond is not actually a fucking bond. I'm going to read to you now from Yahoo Finance. Former President Donald Trump's effort to challenge his massive civil fraud conviction itself appears to rely on deception, the Daily Beast reported. Last week, Trump posted a $175 million bond to appeal his $454 million fraud conviction in New York. This, after his lawyers claimed he was unable to find anyone willing to guarantee he would actually pay the full amount. In order to post that bond, the former president turned to Knight Specialty Insurance Company, led by billionaire Don Hankey. described by MSNBC legal analyst Lisa Rubin as the king of subprime car loans. But according to former regulators and other legal experts, the bond is highly irregular. Per a legal filing, it amounts to little more than a promise that Trump himself could pay the full cost of the bond if he ultimately loses his appeal, the Daily Beast reported, noting that such an arrangement effectively negates the whole point of an insurance company guarantee. It does not appear that Knight Specialty Insurance Company could even cover the bond if it wanted. According to a court filing, the company has finance revenues of just $138 million. And while a related corporate entity claims a financial surplus of $1 billion, the court filing does not explicitly state that it would be liable. Quote, based on the financial statement provided, Knight Specialty is providing a bond that is one-third of its total assets and greater than its surplus, which is incomprehensible for a carrier to underwrite. Maria T. Vullo, a law professor at Fordham University who previously served as New York's top financial regulator, told the publication. Indeed, experts who reviewed the bond said, bond filing said it appeared to state that it is, quote, Donald J. Trump, who, quote, shall pay any bond and arrangement that is far from normal. That is not common. And Alex Hanley, CEO of the civil bond company Jurisco, told the outlet. New York Attorney General Letitia James also has questions about the bond and its issuer's ability to pay it, stating in a legal filing last week that she, quote, takes exception to the sufficiency of the surety to the undertaking. A hearing on Trump's bond and the potential issues with it is scheduled for April 22nd. Hankey, for his part, in a recent interview with Reuters, insisted that he had accepted collateral for the $175 million bond, but he added that he was not sure exactly what the source of it was. Quote, I don't know what it came from, Donald Trump. I don't know if it came from Donald Trump or from Donald Trump and supporters, he said, adding that he now regrets only charging Trump a low fee for his services. Yeah, I bet you regret it, because now your name is absolute duck and dog shit, and now you're officially hooked up with this motherfucker, and you're going to try and tell people that you're going to be okay with being on the hook for $175 million for Donnie, but you're actually slipping in the paperwork that, well, if he loses the appeal, it's going to be him that's going to pay? Every fucking thing with this guy is a scam, right? Everything. And this is the part I don't understand. Before we get into another story here, this is the fucking part I don't understand about Trumpers. It's not like this shit was a fucking secret. It's not like when Donald Trump decided he was going to run for president in 2015, all of a sudden we found out that he was a scumbag. We've known he was a scumbag since the fucking 80s, right? He was that piece of shit with fake everything, pretending to be the richest man in the world, pretending to be the smartest man in the world, pretending to be the billionaire playboy, fucked around on all of his wives, bankrupted his fucking companies, dragged his father's name to the fucking mud, turned what was a little empire that he was basically handed into fucking rubble, just leveraged all of it, had no fucking clue what he was doing. It's all a facade. It's all fucking fake. We've seen it unfold for 40 fucking years. And then he comes out there and he puts that R next to his name, says he hates the same people that they hate, says he's going to give them all the judges they want, says he's going to give them all the fucking anti-abortion laws that they want, and they all look at him like he's fucking God. You know, you take a look at some of these fucking people sometimes. I know it's painful to watch Trump rallies, right? It's just, it's mind-numbingly stupid. But once in a blue moon, stop and pay attention to some of these fucking people. Look at the way they look at him when he's on stage. We say it's a cult because it's a fucking cult. Look at the way, first of all, He hoards them into fucking pens in, like, cow pastures and shit. Literally. These are people that call other people sheep, and then they allow themselves to be herded into fenced-in areas in literal pastures. So they could all wear the same shit and all stare at the same guy with awe in their eyes. Have you ever seen it? Some of these fucking people look up at that stage like a stoner looking into a frozen burrito at the 7-Eleven at 2 o'clock in the morning, thinking that they're staring into the eyes of Jesus. Just, oh, man, there he is. It's a fucking cult, man. And everything this cult touches dies. Rick Wilson was correct. Everything Trump ever touches over the course of his life dies. And now he's into politics, and it's fucking killing that too. This guy's fucking done. Right? Rudy Giuliani, done. You know, this lawyer, done. That lawyer, done. This politician, done. That. How do you think Mike Pence's career is going to go moving forward? Huh? You think Mike's going to have a stellar outing in the next presidential bid? He's just going to bounce back like nobody's business? Mike Pence, comeback player of the year. No, his fucking career is done. Done. He's going to get paid to do some speaking engagements. He'll sell a few books, but he's done. It's all fake, man. Even the fucking bond. It's all fake. Everything about this guy. From his faux cufflinks made of cubic zirconia, to his fake Rolex watches, to his fake business acumen, to his fake intelligence, to his fake ass wife. All of it is fake. And they eat it up with a spoon, man. I don't understand it. It's mind-blowing to me. Now, you guys might have seen that this happened, and this is going to keep blowing up in the Republicans' face for the foreseeable future, my friends. The Republicans, they fucked up. They fucked up big, and it is going to haunt them for a fucking hot minute. Here recently, Trump puts out his position on abortion, right? He was proud to get Roe v. Wade overturned. He was proud to be the guy who put the difference-making justices on the highest court in the land and finally be the one who can claim victory in getting Roe overturned, which then put the decision about abortion rights into each individual state's hands, and he says that's where it belongs. It is up to the states to decide. I did that. I gave the power to the states to decide. That's where it should belong. The states should make these calls. And then they did. And Donnie started to freak out. Here very recently, one red southern state declared that embryos were actually children. And Donnie freaked out and said, that's not right. We shouldn't be doing that. Well, it's in the state's hands, right, Donnie? That's what you wanted, right? And now it's happened again. Arizona, the Arizona Supreme Court, has upheld the most restrictive abortion ban yet that was written before Arizona was even a state. And Donnie's freaking out about it again. Took the Truth Social to say, hey, no, can't do that. And why does all of this happen? Because Republicans will forever underestimate the power of bodily autonomy. What it means to everybody. Not just liberals, not just Democrats, not just leftists. What it means to everybody wants to control their own body. I'm going to read to you now from NBC News. The Arizona Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that a 160-year-old near-total abortion ban still on the books in the state is enforceable, a bombshell decision that adds the state to the growing list of places where abortion care is effectively banned. The ruling, allows an 1864 law in Arizona to stand that made abortion a felony punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison for anyone who performs one or helps a woman obtain one. The law, which was codified in 1901 and again in 1913, outlaws abortion from the moment of conception, but includes an exception to save the woman's life. The Civil War era law, enacted a half century before Arizona even gained statehood, was never repealed, and an appellate court ruled last year that it could remain on the books as long as it was harmonized with a 2022 law, leading to substantial confusion in Arizona regarding exactly when during a pregnancy abortion was outlawed. The decision, which could shutter abortion clinics in the state, effectively undoes a lower court's ruling that stated that a more recent 15-week ban from March of 2022 superseded the 1864 law. The Arizona Supreme Court said it would put its decision on hold for 14 days, writing that it would send the case back to a lower court so that court could consider, quote, additional constitutional challenges, end quote, that haven't yet been cleared up. Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat, said moments after the ruling that she would not enforce the law. Quote, let me be completely clear, as long as I am Attorney General, no woman or doctor will be prosecuted under this draconian law in this state, Mays said in a statement, adding that the decision was, quote, unconscionable and, quote, an affront to freedom. Democrats all the way up to President Joe Biden also blasted the ruling. Quote, millions of Americans, or Arizonans, my apologies, will soon live under an even more extreme and dangerous abortion ban, which fails to protect women, even when their health is at risk or in tragic cases of rape or incest, Biden said in a statement. He called the ban cruel and, quote, a result of the extreme agenda of Republican elected officials who are committed to ripping away women's freedom, and vowed to, quote, continue to fight to protect reproductive rights. Vice President Kamala Harris announced shortly after the ruling that she would travel to Arizona on Friday, quote, to continue her leadership in the fight for reproductive freedoms, end quote. Responding to questions from NBC News about the Arizona ruling, a spokesperson for Donald Trump's campaign referred only to the former president's comments on Monday that abortion restrictions should be left to the states. So you got that? Arizona puts out this ruling, becomes the most restrictive state in the fucking country. Somebody asked the Trump campaign about it, and they said, well, you know, you heard what Trump said. It should stick with the states. Quote, President Trump could not have been more clear. These are decisions for people of each state to make. Quote, end quote. Trump campaign National Press Secretary Caroline Levitt said. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs called for the GOP-controlled legislature, which is currently in session, to repeal the 1864 ban, though there was no immediate indication that the Republican lawmakers in either chamber would take up such an effort. Quote, we are 14 days away from this extreme ban coming back to life, Hobbs, a Democrat, said at a press conference. It must be repealed immediately. While Hobbs said she was sure reproductive rights advocates would appeal the ruling in the 14-day window they were given, she also suggested that the best avenue to counter the ruling would be for voters to support abortion rights on the November ballot. A separate ongoing suit would allow for abortion providers to continue providing legal services. Excuse me, not legal services. Hang on. Frog in my throat. How nice for the frog. Providing services through the 15th week of pregnancy for another 45 days. Quote, it is more urgent than ever that Arizonans have the opportunity to vote to enshrine the right of abortion in our Constitution this November. I am confident that Arizonans will support this ballot measure, and I'm going to continue doing everything in my power to make sure it is successful, Hobbs said. In a 4-2 ruling, the court's majority concluded that the 15-week ban does not create a right to or otherwise provide independent statutory authority for an abortion that repeals or restricts the Civil War era ban, but rather is predicated entirely on the existence of a federal constitutional right to an abortion since disclaimed by the 2022 Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. These people are fucking insane. I'm sorry. They will forever underestimate. I was trying to think of the right terminology. The effects of overturning Roe. Right, so for years and years and years, they were able to rile up their base and win some elections here and there because they could say to their base, "We need you. You need to elect me so that we can overturn abortion." Right, and then they finally overturned abortion and they lost the ability to run on that. Now, the Democrats can turn around and say, or have turned around and said, "Whoa, they finally did it. We need to elect Democrats to ultimately reverse this wrong somehow, some way. We need to send a message." And Republicans are joining. Right? Abortion has won in red states on ballot initiatives. When the people are allowed to vote, even in like Missouri, red states like Missouri, right? You're seeing shit happen that you never thought was going to happen before. Or was it Oklahoma? Missouri, I believe, is coming up. The people don't want to be told what they're going to do with their own bodies. No matter if they're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, or don't give a fuck about politics whatsoever. They don't want to be told what to do. And the Republicans keep forgetting that simple fact. Here's why this is extremely problematic for Republicans. I'm going to read to you some stuff here. According to Gallup's May 2023 update on Americans' abortions views, 34% believe abortion should be legal under any circumstance, 51% say legal only under certain circumstances, and 13% say it should be illegal in all circumstances. A follow-up question asked for those taking the middle position finds 13% want abortion to be legal under most circumstances, while 36% favor it in only a few circumstances. The result is 40% of U.S. adults favoring expansive abortion rights, legal in all or most cases, and 49% favoring more restrictive rights, legal in only a few or no cases. When asked about the legality of abortion at different stages of a pregnancy, about two-thirds of Americans say it should be legal in the first trimester, 69%. While support drops to 37% for the second trimester and 22% for the third. Majorities oppose abortion being legal in the second, 55%, or third, 70% trimesters. In May 1st through 24th, 2023 survey is Gallup's first update of Americans' abortion views since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in its Dobbs decision. However, the May 2022 survey was conducted mostly after a leaked copy of the Dobbs opinion was reported in the news. Continuing a shift seen in May of 2022, Gallup's 2023 abortion update finds the public continuing to lean more pro-choice, 52%, than pro-life, 44%, in their identification on abortion. This is a change from 2007 to 2021, when more than 50% of Americans identified as pro-choice. About half of registered voters in the United States say this year's elections will have a major impact on access to abortion, and about 1 in 8 voters say that abortion is the most important issue driving their vote. That's according to a new KFF survey. Abortion is a particularly motivating issue for Black women, with more than a quarter of voters in this group saying it is the most important issue to them ahead of the 2024 election. It is also the driving issue for larger than average shares of Democratic women, 22%, women who live in states with abortion bans, 19%, and women of reproductive age or older or adult women under the age of 50, 17%. The majority of voters who named abortion as the most important issue to them say it should be legal in all or most cases. About half, 48%, said they would vote for President Joe Biden if the election were held today, while 26% say they would back former President Donald Trump. The Republicans fucked up when they overturned Roe. I say this all the time. You see the dog chasing the car. They finally caught the car, and they don't know what to do with it now. They can't tell their supporters, elect me, I'm going to go get abortion banned. They've already got that. These are some of the most restrictive abortion bans you've ever seen. And they're insane. So they got what they wanted. So they lose something that they can run on. In addition to losing something they can run on, they have riled up moderates in this country, left-leaning people in this country, women in this country. You cannot tell people in this country that you know best what should happen to their body. And because you know best what should happen to their body, you are going to legislate what can and cannot happen to their body. I don't give a fuck who they are. They don't like that. And the Republicans are learning that lesson the hard way. They're losing it at the ballot box. They're losing it on election day. The Republicans have been losing elections since Donald Trump first won in 2016. But since Roe v. Wade has been overturned, they have been getting their asses kicked. And in some pretty reliably red places. We're overturning reliably red state seats with people who are openly running on a pro-choice campaign. There was a woman that just overturned a state seat, I believe in Alabama, that was reliably red. And the main focus of her campaign was reproductive rights. The Republicans keep underestimating the backlash to Roe. Trump knows that they keep underestimating the backlash to Roe because he can fucking see it. Which is why he has come out now and said that the law in Alabama that says that an embryo is actually a child, and the Supreme Court in Arizona upholding this draconian, correct term for it, law, is what's going to cost him his fucking election. Among many other things. People are fucking pissed. The Republicans have taken it a step too far. And they're going to keep losing elections for a hot minute. Once again, that's why you keep hearing about the border. People are working. People are making money. The economy's thriving. The stock market's up. Unemployment is down. They can't run on the economy. The Supreme Court has already overturned Roe v. Wade. The states have been given the rights to go ahead and make the decisions they want. And several states have already gone, I think 22, 23 states now have already banned abortion in some way, shape, or form. They can't run on that anymore. So now they're going to talk to you about brown people coming across the border. But the fact that Trump took the Truth Social to say, hey, you can't do this, man. You gotta reverse this shit. That tells you how fucking scared he is of the abortion issue. That tells you how much he knows. They fucked up. They fucked up big time. It's just a matter of time before the rest of the Republican Party catches up and realizes. I think it's going to be too late for them by that point in time, though, because most of them are going to wind up losing their jobs. Folks, I'm sorry I didn't have a podcast for you last week. Last week was a rough week, and I'm not telling you that we're going to have all kinds of great weeks moving forward either. There are going to be some rough weeks in there, and I am going to try my damnedest to make a podcast as often as humanly possible because I enjoy doing it, and I believe you guys enjoy hearing it. Having said that, I'm also going to try and get some guests on this particular podcast in addition to my other podcast where I've had a slew of great guests. Go subscribe to Off Topic with Tom Powell. It's only $4.20 a month. It's less than $5 a month. And I have great interviewees after great interviewee after great interviewee over there with more to come. Here, I'd like to get some candidates running for office. So, if you know somebody that's running for office, and we would like to talk to them, let's get together. I want to talk to people that are going to be on the ballot in 2024, and I want to help get as many Democrats elected as humanly possible. I think that we need to send a message in 2024 bigger than the one that we sent in 2020. So, help me land some interview guests. I've reached out to a couple of candidates. I've reached out to Colin Allred. I have not heard back whether or not we are definitely going to do something or not. Help a brother out. You know some candidates out there. You got some connections with some campaigns. Spread the word around. I'm looking for some guests on this podcast leading up to the election. I want to make sure that the word gets out about enough Democratic candidates as humanly possible. outside of that, I thank you guys as always for listening. Especially to a schlub like me who doesn't even really know how to podcast. I appreciate it. I truly do. I appreciate it. My family appreciates it. And I would love nothing more than to continue to grow these two podcast platforms so that I can do it full time and continue to crank out great content for you guys. But I need the support. So if you guys could spread the word as much as humanly possible, sign up to the other podcast, help me grow that so I can help retire my wife, and then we can continue to make quality content and attract quality guests for you guys. Having said that, that's all I got for you this week, folks. Do me a favor and make sure that you tune in next week. Subscribe to the podcast so that you get alerted when the new episode goes up. Subscribe so that you can hear the next episode before anybody else does. And tune in next week for an all-new episode of the Second Half Podcast. Until then, as always, stay grateful.